As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I am famous for recommending recording podcasts. Don't want to be a hypocrite.
All right, let's do this.
Recording. All right, I'm recording. Perfect. Get that mic up. Open up my diaphragm.
How about we can just watch basketball? How about we can just watch basketball?
Good morning and welcome to the Daily Ding. Happy Monday morning. Let's kick off the week with some great NBA action from this weekend. We have your Christmas Day games back on Friday, although only, actually none of them were worth talking about. We might get into one of them. But Sunday and Saturday night, we're chock full of great action here. And that's why we're going to talk about it on the Athletic Podcast Network, because I'm Jared Weiss. I'm joined by the one and only Bo Kekeel. The legend Jade Hoy is making us sound clean and like we know what we're doing. But before we get into the show, I want to make sure that you don't miss exclusive in-depth coverage of this unprecedented sports season in 2020. So you can subscribe now and save with The Athletic by going to theathletic.com/dailyding, where you can receive an all-access subscription and get one to give for free. It's the holidays. If you forgot to give your Christmas gifts and you're like, uh-oh, I got to make up for this one here. I got to give something that I know they're going to like. We got you covered. You go to theathletic.com/dailyding, where you can receive your all-access subscription, and you get to give one for free. So, coming up on today's show, Luka went off. Luka really went off. The Pacers win off of a Domantas Sabonis game winner, and the Rockets, they might be okay. But first, we're going to go back to that Mavs game against the Clippers, because we had history. A 50-point halftime lead for the Mavs over the Clippers, right after the Clippers seemed like they were pretty good. That was a record in the shot clock era, which means it's a record because no one ever talks about, hey, remember the records from before the shot clock era, Mo? So this game was insane. It ends up in a 124-73 win for the Mavericks, which, believe it or not, was not indicative of how much of a blowout this was, even with that score. Take me through the Luka show at the beginning of this game, Mo.
I mean, the thing is, Luka got anywhere he wanted on the court at any point. The Clippers really had no chance at defending him. And, you know, we should mention that Kawhi Leonard didn't play the game. He took a massive elbow on Christmas Day that required 8 stitches, and he ended up missing today's game. But I don't even know if Kawhi could have stopped him today. He was unbelievable. Just, Jared, in the first quarter, he had 13 points, 6 rebounds, and 4 assists. Just in the first quarter.
That's okay.
I mean, you know, he was getting into the spots, getting into the lanes, finding guys. He found opportunities for Maxi Kleba, for Josh Richardson. Like, he was just diming guys out. Like, honestly, it was just an incredible performance to start the game from Luka. And, I mean, he closed the door on the Clippers before the door even opened.
Yeah, he bolted the door down. He was sitting there with a shotgun in hand, ready in case anybody came through. What I really loved was that they came out after halftime
after, I'm sure Ty Lue was like, hey guys, nice season. Let's see if we can salvage something here. And Luka came out and continued to destroy them, throwing full court passes, breaking guys down off the dribble with hezzy moves, you know, whipping cross-court passes after driving around the elbows. I mean, he was just doing really everything in his bag. And what I really love was there was this one possession where he almost airballed a shot. And you're like, oh, wow, one little sliver of hope here late in the third quarter. And then was it Willie Cauley-Stein, I think, that got the rebound? And he kicked it out to a teammate who hit a three. And you're just like, wow, there's literally nothing that Clippers could possibly try to accomplish in this game.
I mean, look, when you talk a little bit of hope, I mean, they scored the first 10 points in the third quarter and we're still down 40, down 50 at the half, honestly, only scoring 27 points at halftime. You know, it was a rough day for the Clippers. You know, you could try to pin it on a million different things, but ultimately at the end of the day, they didn't come to play and the Mavs were ready to roll. And that just made a whole difference. And the Mavs had a little more to play for being, you know, already having lost two games, 0-2, they didn't want to go back home, you know, down 0-3. You know, they wanted to kind of start getting in the win column and enjoying themselves there a little bit and having some of that fun that everybody else was getting into. So, you know, credit to them. They came out and they came out hard. And it wasn't just Luka. Josh Richardson had a great game, 4-8 from 3 for 21 points. I mean, they were just rolling, Jared.
Well, what I loved is that they had 9 guys with a plus 20 or above in this game. And then Dwight Powell was a plus 12. So, I mean
you win by 51, you're going to have a lot of guys.
Right? But I just like that they spread the wealth, that they were just consistently dominant no matter who was out there in the rotation. And that's what we want to see out of this Dallas team. This Dallas team is the most centralized team talent-wise in the entire NBA. So you want to see that steadiness out of them that indicates that they're going to be able to perform up to their potential. It's very clear that they're doing that.
Yeah, it was great. And then just the Clippers, again, one more point. 4-33 from 3.
Kudos to them for getting up 33 threes in this game and at least sticking to it. That's good to see. Paul George 0-for-6, Serge Ibaka 0-for-4. Even Luke Kennard went 1-for-6. When you got your one sharpshooter out there going 1-for-6, and that's probably your best performance. So Reggie Jackson was their best 3-point shooter at 2-for-5 from the field. So you know what? Not everything was terrible. At least Reggie Jackson almost shot 40% from three.
If you ask Clipper fans, that's terrible to them.
All right. Well, let's go from terrible to great. Saturday night, James Harden finally playing. He looks out of shape. We know he's been just spending the last few weeks popping bottles every single night, cruising around, checking out all the best clubs that America has to offer, or trying to be out there supporting his people, becoming a boss. And what does he do? He comes out there and he is an absolute boss, just putting up the kind of numbers that, you know, is just like unfathomable, I would say, for pretty much any other player in the NBA. But then for some reason with James Harden, it just doesn't even stand out that much. But it's 12-for-22 from the field, 6-for-13 from the line, 14-for-16 from the line, 6-for-13 from deep, 44 points and 17 assists. And yet the team still loses 128-126 to the Blazers. Because CJ McCollum had 44 points, Dame Lillard had 32 points, Enes Kanter came off the bench with 10-9, while Yusuf Nurkic had 12-11, and 6 dimes for him. McCollum and Lillard, 8 and 9 dimes respectively. I mean, these guys are close to double-doubles, even though they're putting up insane scoring numbers. This game was just absolutely phenomenal, but let's start where obviously we have to begin, which is, were you at all surprised to see Harden walk out there, like kind of visibly look like he's not in shape yet and still put up the kind of numbers that most people could only dream of?
Not really. And here's the thing, Jared. You know, the Rockets came into this team with no John Wall, with no Eric Gordon, with no DeMarcus Cousins. I mean, it was basically James Harden, Christian Wood, and everybody else. And from that point, I looked at it going like, oh, this ball's going to be in James Harden's hand the entire game. And it was. Now, here's the thing, and this is the important thing that matters. He delivered. And that's really the most impressive thing about it. You know, to start the game, they were kicking the Blazers' ass. You know, they were really giving it to him in the beginning of this game. I think they were up, you know, as much as like 10 to 12 points in the first half. And then the Blazers kind of turned it on in the second half defensively and got themselves going. But for a minute, it looked like we were going to head into not just a Harden kind of killing the Blazers, but it was going to be a blowout style. I mean, you didn't even mention Christian Wood, who had 31 points and 13 rebounds. Like that was a solid tandem just between the two of them. And it was fun to watch Harden, whatever you think of all the off court antics and things like that. It was fun to watch Harden just go to work and cook. And look, man, this game goes to overtime. It's incredibly tight. James Harden hits a three to go up. And then CJ McCollum comes down and Daniel House for some reason leaves him on a on a Dame drive and Dame finds CJ for the game winning three. I mean, like, I don't know, man, it was a lot of fun basketball to watch on Saturday night because of that.
There were 26 lead changes in this game. The longest run was a 10-point run. The Rockets, so they built up that 16-point lead in the second quarter. What was impressive was that, you know, the Blazers, they whittled that back down to about a 5-point lead just before halftime. But then coming out of the half, the Rockets, they built that back up. They went back up on a nice little run there. And you're thinking, oh, this could be easy for the Blazers to fall apart. But that's when they really seized the game halfway through the third quarter. And, you know, the Blazers, they once again, they have a really nice balance across the depth of their roster. And then, of course, those nights when CJ and Dame are on top of their game, they're, you know, they can hit up there with anybody in the league. They're really as good as it gets. But one of the things I thought was really interesting was David Nwaba was actually making himself felt in this game. And that was just something that, you know, of all the usual cast of characters that you expect to see in a game like this, you know, having it's one thing to have Christian Wood come out there and make an impact, but David Nwaba coming out there and, you know, chipping in 10 points or so in this game, like that was a real surprise there. It seems like there's a lot more than meets the eye with James Harden coming back here with this team.
Wait. First, put a little respect on University High School legend David Nwaba out here from good old Los Angeles. You put respect on that name, Jared. I will not tolerate anything other than that.
I'm trying to put respect on it.
You sounded surprised. I'm not surprised because I know what David Nwaba could do. No, it was fun to watch. I mean, there's not much more we can say about it. I mean, I thought the Blazers did a really good job defensively in the, you know, almost the second half of the second half. You know, I thought Covington was doing a good job rotating over and things like that. I think it made a difference for this Blazers team to get the win. And, you know, as you know, just for Harden, it's kind of interesting. I still really want to see what this team looks like when they do have Harden, Wall, Eric Gordon, Christian Wood, Cousins coming off the bench. Like, I kind of want to see what this team looks like before we get too crazy and all the, well, we've already crossed the point of trade talks.
Yeah, I know. But you know what? Sterling Brown, he went 4-for-5 in this game. Jayshon Tate, when the ball isn't being thrown at him and he's actually getting passes, he's pretty solid. He went 5-for-9. He had 13 points in this game. So the guys stepping in for Eric Gordon, John Wall, DeMarcus Cousins being hurt, they were carrying the water when they had to. So this team could be an exciting team, could be a playoff team. I mean, I think very likely would be a playoff team, or at least in the play-in tournament mix, with James Harden staying there. And I think what I really took away from this game was that there's been a lot of talk about, should teams trade for James Harden? Do you want the headache? All that kind of stuff. I think he reminded all of us, yeah, I'm worth the headache. I'm worth putting up with whatever you got to put up with, because I am an unstoppable offensive force unlike anything in the league.
He's Thanos.
All right, well, we'll kiss the rings.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Okay, let's get to our shocker of the day. The Hornets beat the Nets, which maybe last year wouldn't have been news, but this year certainly is news. 106 to 104, they just squeaked through. Gordon Hayward, the $30 million man again, he had 28 points on 12 for 20 shooting, 7 dimes on 6 boards. He was everything that they were hoping he would be coming into the year. Terry Rozier, he went 7 for 14 from the field and had 19 of his own. PJ Washington, 14 and 12 and 5 dimes out of the 4 spot. Bismack Biyombo as a starter had 12 points on 5 for 6 shooting. But that was pretty impressive. LaMelo Ball, he had 6 points. He had 5 dimes, 5 boards. Wasn't a great shooting night for him, though he did go 2 for 3 from the field. So this was a pretty impressive game from the Hornets going up against Brooklyn, who KD and Kyrie, they had once again very, really tight, efficient games. 29 points on 9 for 15 shooting for KD, 25 on 10 for 17 shooting for Kyrie. Jared Allen, he came in with 8 points and 14 boards. DeAndre, only 1 point, but he had those 12 boards. You know, they're going to rack it up. But so, you know, this was a game where I think both sides pretty much were kind of playing their game as you would expect it. And it was just impressive that Charlotte, it seems to be, has enough firepower that they can compete when they're playing their best against a team like Brooklyn.
No, I mean, look, Charlotte's got talent. Like, I don't know really where it's going to lead them to. It's not like they got great top end talent. But Gordon Hayward, listen, before all the injuries and before everything that happened in Boston, was a hell of a ball player, you know, and he's showing it here now with the 28 points in this game. I thought, you know, and a well-rounded seven assists, 6 rebounds. I think he's just kind of showing this is what they can do. Terry Rozier can play, you know, and the other thing that this team does is they actually play defense. This is, you got to give a lot of credit to Coach James Borrego. I mean, he gets the most out of these guys and he gets them to compete on both ends of the court. You know, I thought this game said a lot about the Hornets' character. They're, you know, they haven't won a game yet. This is their first win. Shocker, it's against the Nets, and they pull off the upset. But, you know, they kind of just stayed with it. They've been in close games. They lost a tough one to the Thunder, you know, I believe on Saturday night. And this on the second night of a back-to-back, they come in and they perform extremely well. Like, I'm really impressed with this team. They got a lot of talent. I don't know if it's enough to take you into the playoffs. Maybe they're a playing team in the East, but I don't know if they're going to be I don't think they're going to be in the top 6. But the more interesting thing for me, Jared, was this game was kind of this showed you all the stuff that can go wrong with Brooklyn. You know, we saw in the previous games, you know, what it looks like when it goes right. Basically, everybody's clicking and things like that. Spencer Dinwiddie goes down with a sprained knee. You have Caris LeVert, you know, struggling, going 4 for 12 from the field. You know, Kyrie and KD aren't going to be just enough. Right. And only way it is when it's the two of them going to be just enough is when they go nuclear and they both have 50. But I think this is going to be this is the challenging stuff that they're going to have to figure out, because I thought they couldn't do it. Anything, they did a good job defending the perimeter.
Yeah. You know, in those previous couple games that Brooklyn had played, there was it was a little bit higher usage from KD and Kyrie, and they just kind of knocked the doors off whoever they were facing. But that wasn't the case this time. And I think because of that, there wasn't that much responsibility on the guys surrounding them to really put up numbers. But I think this time they just needed it a little bit more. And so when you have Landry Shamet and Torian Prince combining for 0 for 14 from the field, that's when you're really feeling it. So maybe they're going to need to see Irving and Durant taking closer to 20 shots a night. And I mean, hey, they looked incredible. I mean, that Irving, that switching the hand in midair layup was really spectacular. I mean, we could see these guys, as far as their craft is concerned, they're really performing at that top level. This team clearly has the talent to be the juggernaut. And then the question is really, can Caris and Joe Harris, I didn't mean to rhyme that, can they step up in a consistent enough basis that they can kind of carry things when KD and Kyrie aren't going to be super high usage? Because you know that you can't sustain that over the course of the year. And so far, it's been a little bit of a mixed bag. And this was the time it really showed itself. But I do want to give credit to Timothée Luwawu-Cabarrot. TLC has been really strong for them. really revived his career last year and is continuing to earn a rotation spot with this team. So at least that was the one silver lining you get to take away for Brooklyn in this game.
And we got to talk about also the fact is they were a KD mid-range jumper away from tying this game and going to overtime. Sure. Like, you know, I mean, when KD pulls up, I mean, first he catches it at the above the break three or closer to the slot. It looked like he had a wide open three. He passes up on that, drives base, you know, drives towards the baseline and pulls up. And even though it's Bismack Biyombo giving him the contest, I don't know about you, but I thought the shot was going in. I was like, oh, this is going to be a tight game. You know, and it just kind of rimmed out. But like they were right there as well. So for all the problems that they had in this game in terms of not getting other guys to show up and defensive issues, I mean, they were still right in this. It's just also like you shouldn't have to worry about this game against Charlotte.
Yeah, but you know what? Going back to what you were saying about Hayward, you know, the beginning of last season, Hayward looked like this. He looked like he was going to be an all-star, and then he broke his hand running into LaMarcus Aldridge a couple weeks into the season, and that he fell off because of that. Thankfully, you know, he did hurt himself running into somebody again earlier this preseason, I think, right? And thankfully, it didn't take him out. So hopefully the bad luck doesn't come around again. You know, Hayward has just been getting consistent bad luck with his injuries. And right now he looks, I mean, he just looks physically different. He is moving with intensity and purpose. He feels really comfortable out there, even though they're just kind of building the offense around him. This team is going to continue to get better over the course of the year as they continue to build that offense around Hayward. And you're right about Borrego. I mean, Borrego, the fact that this team wasn't like the worst team in the NBA last year, I think shows how good of a coach Borrego is that he was able to squeeze some wins out of them. But you know what? Terry Rozier, for all the flack that he catches, he's showing, I think, this season. He's a good two-way player. And when you can keep him under control and playing within the system, he can be very effective. And they've got a lot of guys like that. And I think they have just enough talent now that it's actually coming together. All right, well, let's end it here with the team that the Nets at least kicked their asses on Christmas. That was the Celtics. They lost to the Pacers in Indiana, 108-107. Domas Sabonis has a game-winning and one, although he missed a free throw, driving on Rob Williams with a few seconds left.
Why you got to mention he missed the free throws? Why you got to mention that? Why can't they didn't know that. But you didn't have to ruin that for him.
Okay, there's gonna be one commenter on The Athletic, which, by the way, if you subscribe, you can go to the app and you can leave comments on the podcast episodes. They're gonna be like, Jared, why are you saying it's and one? I'm looking at the play-by-play. I see 2 points. I don't see 3 points here. It's on and one. So I want to get the facts straight because I'm a journalist and that's what we do. We get the facts straight here at The Athletic. And factually, he drew an and one, but he missed a free throw. So what do we call that? An and zero? I don't know. We'll do it. I bet Nerd or Shiro will tackle that one. You and Dave and Seth can yell about that later. But then Jason Tatum gets the ball in isolation, takes a pretty ill-advised shot, which is a step back 30-footer, and gets run into by Malcolm Brogdon as he's landing. He does have his foot kind of kicked out, but looking at the replay, it shows that Malcolm Brogdon was right in his landing space there. They don't call the foul. Tatum just seems to just be mad at himself for not trying to draw the foul. What did you think of those last few sequences there, Mo?
Well, even the sequence before the Sabonis and one or and zero, whatever you want to call it, you know, that was wild. You know, the Pacers inbound the ball. TJ Warren turns it over. Marcus Smart gets a steal and then he gets a layup and the Celtics are up one. I mean, the whole kind of the final few possessions was a bit weird in that sense, but ultimately I didn't mind that foul not being called at the end of the day on Tatum's three. And here's the thing. We saw Tatum get away with this little step back three, banking it in against the Bucks on opening night for the Celtics.
Oh yeah.
We saw him do, was it against the Heat? He did the similar thing in a game winning situation and missed.
Yes.
This step back three for the game winner now, I think off the top of my head, is three times I've seen it from Tatum and he's made one. Might want to try to get something a little bit different. Try to get something maybe, you know, this one was short clock, so it was more of a catch and shoot scenario. But, you know, try to get something going a little bit more forward instead of, you know, going with the step back. I just didn't like the shot, didn't like the selection. didn't like the play call either from Stevens. I thought maybe get something with a little more movement and a little more actions to free him up. Overall, I just didn't think this was a good play call at the end for the Celtics. And I think the refs got it right.
Yeah, I disagree. I thought the foul call should have been called. But regardless, you know, I talked to Tatum after the game, and he said that there was a first option or another option. When you watch the play, Grant Williams inbounds the ball to him with about, I think, like 7 seconds left or so. Williams runs by him, doesn't really try to, like, fake the slip screen. And so the Pacers don't switch, and then you don't really see any other action besides that. It looks like it just goes into ISO from there. So I don't really know what the other option on that play was supposed to be. But Tatum, to his credit, made it very clear. He hears what you're saying, Mo. He didn't specifically shout you out, but I'm pretty sure he definitely heard what you had to say, because he said, I got to be more aggressive. I got to put more pressure on the defense, got to put more pressure on the refs to make a call. That I gotta take the attack to them. I think he's recognizing he got lucky on that shot against Giannis, where, like, that shot was worse than missing it. Like, he wasn't calling bank. So that means if you bank it in, that you really missed. That was way off. So, like, that shot was so lucky that it was almost a negative. And I think he recognizes this now. That's like, he's got to stop settling into these shots. Even if they do feel comfortable, you got to be comfortable being uncomfortable, because he had the ball for several seconds there and he let it wind down. You could do that when it's a tie game, you know, if you miss, you're going to overtime, but not when you're down. When you're down, you have to attack as soon as you can create an option for yourself, and you want to attack earlier so that if the first action doesn't work, you can reset out of it and try again. And he's got to learn how to be a smarter finisher, because we saw in the playoffs last year, that's the big gap for him at this point. He still put up like a 25, 10 and 5 or something like that in this game. So, like, he's still putting up like all NBA numbers, but there is a huge gap. I wrote about this in my story the other day on The Athletic, which you should read if you subscribe, how there is a vast gap between good and great. And he's still navigating those waters, and he's not at great yet. And this is the way that he actually gets there.
Yeah. And he's not supposed to be great yet. He's still a baby.
He's 22. Well, yeah, he's 19, but he's 22.
I mean, he's still a child, you know, granted he has one, but also, like, he's still a baby himself, you know, in that sense, especially in basketball terms, you know, and, you know, he's going to be fine in the long run. You know, the real issue I have for the Celtics, Jared, is just I'm more and more concerned with their playmaking.
Oh, it's bad. You know,
it feels like, and I understand it. Kemba Walker's out. Even Romeo Langford's out. You have Jeff Teague, who's learning the system and coming in off the bench. But, like, this is becoming a real issue, and it's been an issue for the past few games. And, you know, then the other thing, too, and this was really highlighted in this game, you bring a guy like Tristan Thompson so you don't get dominated by guys like Domantas Sabonis. You know, and for Sabonis to be able to get 19, 10, and 5 off of you, like, that's another issue. Like, I have a little bit concerns here with what I'm seeing from the Celtics. You know, I didn't think it would be like they'd be dominant off the bat just with all the injuries, but I didn't imagine they would struggle as much as they have with just getting good shots. It's such a struggle on every possession to get a clean look.
I'll just say counterpoint on the Sabonis numbers. 19, 10, and 5 is pretty pedestrian for Domantas Sabonis at this point. So he definitely had a good game, but, like, that's just Domantas Sabonis at this point. That's not even good for him, honestly. But you're right. And I'll have a story on that later this week. If people don't know and they're new to the show, I'm the Celtics beat writer at The Athletic along with Jay King. So that's why I have all these Celtics articles I'm plugging on the show. But I did write after this game about Rob Williams, who they had out there at the end there, who was the one that got scored on Sabonis. And part of it is that, like, right now, Brad Stevens, he's in this, I wouldn't say rebuild, but they're in this phase early this year where it's like they know they don't have Kemba. They know that they didn't replace Gordon Hayward, and they're probably going to use that giant trade exception that they got for him at the trade deadline to bring in another starter for this team. So right now they're kind of in this moment where they have to figure out what do they have around the roster. So they're putting Rob Williams out there when he's having a solid night and having him finish the game when you would usually have Tristan Thompson or Daniel Tice finish it, which was a very surprising move and a very deliberate move by Stevens. The other night, he had Aaron Nesmith out there when they were trying to come back against the Nets. And Aaron Nesmith, who is supposed to be the sniper, airballed his first three of his entire career by like a foot and a half. But then to his credit, later in the game, nailed the second shot that he got. So
I mean, that's like a running back fumbling his first possession. Like, he's going to be fine.
He'll be fine. But the point is that they're throwing a lot of these guys into the deep end, even if they're, I mean, Rob Williams should be ready to get to the deep end. Like, he's in his third season. But I think they're doing a lot of this stuff. And Peyton Pritchard right now is swimming right away, and he's looking pretty solid. And he went 5 for 5 in this game, while Rob Williams went 6 for 7. So, like, some of these guys are showing that they can get it done. Actually, most interestingly was Jeff Teague went 0 for 6 from the field, but then 9 for 10 from the line. I looked it up, and Derrick Jones and Kent Bazemore are the only two other players in the last three seasons to not make a field goal but still have 10 free throw attempts in a single game. So that's a very impressive act of mediocrity there by Jeff Teague. But so, you know, this team, they're really disjointed right now. You know, Brown and Tatum are completely carrying the offense. They're carrying the usage pretty significantly. But when those guys aren't on the floor together, there is this massive imbalance on the floor with the offense where all the playmaking is on one side of the floor. And then if they want to try to swing it to the other side, they just don't have guys there right now that can actually make a play off of it because they're just thin with their top end talent. And so something has to change with this roster, or some of these younger guys and Teague needs to like kind of find their footing fast. But I'd expect this to be a really slow process for this team. And they're in for a difficult transition right now.
Yep, you said it better than anybody else could.
Well, I guess that's why I get paid to cover them. So that's going to do it for today's show. Thank you for sticking along with us. I'm Jared Weiss. He is Mo DeKeel. Don't forget about the other great basketball shows that we have across the Athletic Podcast Network. We still have your favorite shows like the Athletic NBA show, No Dunks, House of Strauss, plus over a dozen team-specific shows available from some of your favorite athletic beat writers. And don't forget that you got to follow us on the app so you can get notifications for new episodes, and you can utilize those episode comment sections that we were talking about before. I want to hear from you. Do you like And One? Do you like And Zero? We need an answer, and you're going to give us that answer. And if you're not a member of The Athletic, you're in luck because you can get all of our podcasts ad-free, and you can get all the great writing that we have across all the major sports, all for a super low price if you just go to theathletic.com/dailyding, and you can still give away a bonus sub to somebody that you love or someone that you hate. If you hate The Athletic and you want someone to be miserable reading my work, send them that bonus sub as long as you sub too, and then I'm going to change your mind eventually because this is a great program, this is a great outlet, and you're going to enjoy it. So theathletic.com/dailyding. As always, thank you for waking up with us. Mo, let's get out of here.
Ding, ding.